Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Top of the morning to you. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Ebony K. Williams in for Miss Jenna Wolf. That's Hall of Famer Chris Carter. Mr. Nick Wright, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you, Ebony.
It is so good to see you guys.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Looking forward to a great show. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you guys for having me. Listen, we got a lot to talk about this Monday morning.
Yep.
But we're going to start with the Lakers.
Now, spicy Monday.
The Lakers
Ebony
lost
K.
two games this weekend, including one, you guys, to the Phoenix Suns. Yes, the same Suns who have the worst record in the NBA. Now, the Lakers are now 4.5 games out of the eighth seed. LeBron's in jeopardy of missing the playoffs for the first time since 2005. After the game, he was asked about just how frustrated is he.
Obviously, we needed this game for obvious reasons, and we wanted to play well. At times, we play well. I think we was always together at times as well. I have the right mind frame of what we're trying to accomplish tonight. It's just unfortunate with the opportunity that we've had, and we haven't been able to seize the opportunity. Man, we can't keep looking at the standings. The standings are going to be what they are no matter what, no matter if you win or lose. You can't. I've never been one to kind of look at the standings. I mean, you've known me for a while. So you just got to go out and do your job and try to do it at a high level throughout 48 minutes and then see what happens at the end of that. So you can't focus on the standings because they shift and move so much throughout the course of the season.
Nick, what do you make of the Lakers' two losses over the weekend?
Well, it's total disaster for the team, and it's a perfect microcosm for their season, which is one step forward, two or three steps back. I thought the Lakers potentially maybe turned a bit of a corner in the Grizzlies' loss, actually. That fourth quarter of the Grizzlies game, when the defensive intensity was there, when they tried to mount a comeback, they just, after being just dead in the water for the first three quarters, they just couldn't hit shots. And you heard LeBron and Luke Walton after the game more encouraged than they had sounded recently. And then you go and beat the Pelicans. And then for 3.5 quarters against the best team in basketball, the Milwaukee Bucks, I thought the Lakers were playing one of their best games of the season. Ingram was having the best game of his career. LeBron was playing well. And then they fall apart, absolutely fall apart down the stretch against the Bucks, and then have their, add it to the list, a new worst loss of the season against the worst team in basketball. Everyone has to hold accountability for that loss to Phoenix. Luke's rotations were ridiculous. Rajon Rondo continues to play the worst basketball of his career. And when they're trying to mount a comeback, LeBron just misses two free throws to keep going with the worst free throw shooting season of his career, where he is now not even an average, but a markedly below average free throw shooter. So everyone's got to own this. And now the Lakers have lost to all of the worst teams in basketball except for the Bulls, but they get the Bulls in a week and a half, so just wait on that. It's still on the board. But Phoenix, Knicks, Cleveland, Atlanta, Memphis, Washington, those are six of the seven worst teams in the league, the Bulls notwithstanding. They've lost all of them this year. And that's how, even though LeBron is having an excellent statistical season, even though Ingram, since the All-Star break, has been really, really good, and that's the only silver lining, that's how this team is going to miss the playoffs.
It's on the board. I don't want to overreact, but tonight's game against the Clippers, the most important of the season. We didn't think this late in the season, that being March. Now, we didn't expect LeBron James to miss those 18 games, and they're still not healthy. Lonzo Ball, his absence is still missed. But we can't make excuses for the Lakers. If you talk about the before the All-Star break, losing to Atlanta, losing to a Pelicans team without Anthony Davis. And now this third loss, man, that's all you can talk about is the games they should have won, because if they do miss the playoffs, those three games will be part of the conversation. Did the Los Angeles Lakers, in year number one, the first day of free agency, Magic makes contact with LeBron James. But since then, what did they do? Because
everything
this is the team.
Wrong.
This is the team that they have. Since the first day of free agency, they don't have anything that they can say positively outside of, you know something? Ingram might be the big-time player and scorer. We know Kyle Kuzma. We were impressed with him from last year. He continued that this year. But this will be known as the lost LeBron season. Not competing for a championship. First time in 8 years. And to me, what's the difference between Kobe Bryant in his last couple years and LeBron James, what they're doing right now? To me, it don't seem too much different. They're out of the playoff picture, one of the worst Lakers basketball teams that we've seen, that stretch that Kobe went through at the end, and we did not expect this with LeBron James, for them to be this far out of the playoffs this late in the season.
Let me ask both of y'all this. Actually, to that point, Chris, when LeBron announced he was coming to the Lakers, a lot of people said, oh, well, this will be convenient, right? He'll get to say, I'm playing with a bunch of young bucks. I get essentially a year off to focus on my Hollywood ambitions and all the other things I want to do outside of basketball. But did anybody expect it to look this bad?
Well, listen, some people thought, Chris Mannix, our friend, said he thought they were going to miss the playoffs. But I don't think he thought it was going to look like this. Now, there's two ways to look at the season, pre-injury and post-injury for LeBron. But the problem is that since he came back, if they had just beaten the bad teams, they're fine. Since he came back, if they had just beaten, as you mentioned, the Hawks, the Pelicans with no AD, the Grizzlies, and the Suns, then they're playing tonight against the Clippers to solidly be in the playoffs. Instead, I disagree with only one thing you said, Chris. You said the season comes down to tonight. I think the season's a wrap. I think even if they win tonight, they would need to go 15-4 the rest of the way. And at what point this year, at what point have we seen the Lakers where we say they can win 3 out of 4 games for a month plus? I just don't see it. So even if they win tonight, you're like, okay, they're only 3 losses back of the Clippers. They're creeping towards the tiebreaker with them. To me, that won't matter, because even if they beat the Clippers, they will find a way to lose a game they shouldn't.
And I don't think it's right that the narrative, because it's going to be out there, LeBron James came to Los Angeles for the things that you mentioned. And those things, basketball being secondary.
Some people
when you are LeBron James, it's a legitimate question. Did you waste this year in trying to pursue the things? Now, we know the people that help LeBron organize things. And one thing LeBron and Maverick and Rich Paul, we talked to Rich Paul, saw him earlier during the season. Man, they realize the main thing is the main thing, and that's basketball. Now, you might have all these shows, but all these things were created, which LeBron, Maverick, all of them know, off of his ability to dominate basketball. Now, with the postseason, if LeBron is not part of the postseason, I said this a couple weeks ago, if the Lakers don't make the playoffs, LeBron James is not the best basketball player in the world anymore. Now, he might have his ambitions as far as his next career and other things he's doing. He might be satisfied with that. But watching the playoffs is not something LeBron James in this first year with the Lakers that he was expecting. But for all those out there, because that's a part of it. When you have been in the finals 8 years in a row, you go to a Lakers team that is, we don't think, is competitive. It's on the board that people would think that you're outside interest. They've had that type of pull on you, and maybe that's the most important thing to you, even though we've had these discussions with LeBron and people close to LeBron, and that not to be true.
Listen, that criticism will be there. I think that criticism will be ludicrous. LeBron on the year is 27-9-8. As far as guys putting up that stat line, only 5 guys in NBA history have ever done it. You just want to remove the rebounds. Guys in a season that have averaged 27 points and 8 assists or more. It's only 5 other guys in NBA history that have done that, and it's all-time great. So LeBron is being productive, and he's doing it with a heavy workload, and he's doing it coming back from injury, since the injury, averaging a 26-10-11. But the team's losing. And the team is losing games they shouldn't. And, of course, that's going to fall on the shoulders of the best player. Do I think LeBron's the biggest problem with the Lakers? No. I think the front office did him a disservice. I think the head coach has been a disaster. But even with a bad front office and a bad head coach, You're supposed to beat the Suns.
He's won before.
Right, of course, absolutely.
He's won before. We thought in Cleveland the whole time. Yeah. Behind the scenes, we know there was not a lot of continuity. We know there was issues. We know there were coaches' problems. That's why they changed from
David
from
Blatt to Ty Lue.
So, but no situations, he still won. Yeah. So when we give LeBron all the credit, you can expect if there is a failure, then he's going to receive more blame than he should receive.
All right, fair enough, guys. Now it's time to put a grade on it. This is sponsored by CarMax. We're going to turn the page from LeBron's struggles and instead look at the incredible scoring ability of James Harden.
Best basketball player in the NBA.
Mm-mm. Wow. Harden put up 42 in the Rockets' win over the Celtics last night. Nick, put a grade on Harden's performance.
I got to give him an A plus. The plus becomes because of the step back three he hit when the Celtics were trying to mount a run to make it 112-100, where he gets fouled, still makes it, rips their heart out. He was spectacular throughout up until he fouled out of the game and they were able to hold on without him. Mm-hmm. Another great win for a surging Rockets team that, despite that awful start in the injury season, is now just one game out of third place in the West.
Yeah, there's no player playing better than he's playing right now. I thought it was a great story. Mark Jones, the broadcast of the game, talked about going to the gym at the hotel early in the morning. Now, they had a 3:30 Eastern tip-off. James Harden in the gym working out the morning of a game. That's not a narrative I've ever heard with James Harden, but that's the reason why he's been able to keep this amazing season going.
So you give him an A?
Oh, yeah, you got the grade. You give out the grades. I'll just give out the hot takes.
Problem. All right, James Harden is focused. Coming up next, should Kyler be the number one pick in the NFL draft? That's what folks saying, but we'll talk about it next on FS1. You can always check us out on Fox Sports or the Fox Sports app.
This Saturday night, don't miss the biggest pay-per-view fight of the year. Two of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world put their perfect records on the line. Errol Spence Jr. takes on Mikey Garcia for the World Welterweight Championship live from AT&T Stadium. Spence Jr. versus Garcia, Saturday, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, live on pay-per-view. Order now.
We'll get to Kyler Murray in a second, but first, Pistons Raptors, Blake Griffin with an incredible shot over the blackboard.
Oh.
Sadly, it didn't count.
No, it's illegal. You can't. They took this out a number of years ago. Yep. There's an imaginary line like the goal line. Once the ball travels over that, it's not a legal shot.
Not only should it count, they should all be all of those shots should be worth three.
So cool.
A reverse three-pointer. Yeah. Change it, Adam Silver.
Looks good. College basketball. Tennessee's Admiral Schofield soars in for the one-handed slam dunk over the Kentucky defender.
He got up now.
Not only did he get up, but Tennessee's able to avenge the earlier loss to Big Blue Nation and get the win this weekend. Watch out for Tennessee now. They're going to be a number one seed in March Madness.
Finally, Duke-Miami. RJ Barrett flies down the lane, just destroys that rim.
He'd be the best player on any team in the country except for the one that he's on with Zion Williamson. He's going to probably be the second or third pick in the draft, depending on what happened with Ja Morant. He's been excellent.
They need to do a better job with the pick and roll. The guy's left-handed. What's the guy on the pick going on the right-hand side?
All right,
give a little scouting report.
On to Kyler Murray, who didn't do the drills at Combine, but did surpass the important measurement expectations. Now there's a new report that says Kyler is almost universally believed to be the top pick in the draft. Kyler was also asked about how he would feel to be number one.
Obviously, I mean, I'm a competitor. I love the game. To be the number one pick would be, you know, that's a kid's dream come true. So, if my name was called number one, that would, I'd be ready to go for sure. I've never been the biggest guy on the field. I'm always the smallest guy on the field. And I've said it multiple times, you know, I feel like I'm the most impactful guy on the field and the best player on the field of all time. So, you know, that's just the confidence that, you know, I have in myself, you know, my teammates have in me. And I've always had to play at this height. It's never, you know, I don't know. Everybody's trying to make it out to be something, but at the same time, you know, I just go out there and play the game that I love.
All right, he said he ain't new to this. Chris Carter, should he be the number one draft pick, though?
First, I'm going to address something about his height. And, yes, that's the typical excuse that people use. Man, a guy who's small, he played that way in college, he played that way in high school. The thing about it, when he gets to the league, he's playing against some creatures that he didn't see in high school and in college. So there is a reason why the speed, the height requirements, yes, that's why they want them in the NFL. The defensive linemen, you guys watched the combine this week. We saw guys 300 pounds running 4.7, 4.8. Don't tell me height's not important, speed's not important. It's important at the NFL. I can understand all the arguments, but it is on the board. After, when he stood there at the combine and got those measurements of 5'10", Because to me, it was only maybe a quarter, half inch higher than I expected it to be.
It was a quarter inch exactly higher than what he was listed at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
He was 5'9 and 7/8, and then he became 5'10 and 1/8. That's a quarter of an inch.
So for me, a lot of teams had him as the first player that they're going to take. He interviewed with 10 teams at the combine. I wouldn't be surprised, especially with Cliff Kingsbury, his experience in college football, what he said earlier in the season. But it really amounts to one person. Can Steve Keim, the general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, can he fetch a good price for Josh Rosen?
Correct.
Because they asked a number of general managers at the combine, what would you give for him? And they were talking about a number three pick, not number three in the draft, a third round pick. And there's no way that Arizona's in a situation because once they let it out that Josh Rosen is on the board to be traded, then teams will know that Kyler Murray is on. But I wouldn't be surprised if Arizona drafts him as the number one pick now.
It would, even if he's a good player, God, the process there would be so backwards. They traded up to get Josh Rosen a year ago.
A third and a fifth.
To move from 15 to 10.
Yes.
To get Rosen. Mm-hmm. The same guy's in charge, Steve Keim. And according to Peter King this morning, Steve Keim has full control of the draft. So a year ago, Steve Keim liked Rosen so much, and by the way, liked Steve Wilks, enough to make him the head coach, him the quarterback. Mm-hmm. And Wilks got a year and is gone. And now Rosen's going to get less than a full year and be gone? Like, that's the process you're going to go through. A team with this many holes is going to take a quarterback, essentially, in 2 years' draft, spend the first pick, the 15th pick, a third-round pick, and a fifth-round pick all on a quarterback. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, can you get Miami to give up number 13 for Josh Rosen? Well, then all of a sudden, you've recouped 90% of your investment. I'll listen to it. Maybe even Washington, who is in a quarterback disaster scenario.
Yes.
With Alex Smith's injury, where he's probably going to miss all of next year, if not more. Would they give up number 15? But I also would not be rushing to give up on Josh Rosen. And I would not be rushing to spend the number one pick of the draft on Kyler Murray, who, while the upside I understand, the downside is a backup quarterback. He's not like the downside of Haskins is a below average starting quarterback in this league who starts for 10 years, like barring injury, obviously. The downside of Murray is that it just doesn't happen, is that he is the shortest guy to ever be drafted as a quarterback. There's a reason for that, and it never clicks in for him at the NFL level. If you do have teams that love Kyler Murray, if the Raiders and John Gruden, if those reports are true and they love him, man, I'm trying to call John Gruden and say, you want to give me the four, one of your other first rounders, and a mid-round pick, and we can swap four for one. You can get Kyler, and the Cardinals can get either an offensive lineman or one of these creatures you're talking about, someone to help Josh Rosen and the team now. I just don't believe in giving up on quarterbacks that you traded up for after 1 year, and especially when in that same division. Jared Goff was even worse his rookie year. Got a new coach, a supposed quarterback whisperer, the guy who Cliff Kingsbury was hired to be the most like, and turned it around instantly. Like, I don't want to give up on Rosen yet, and I don't want to take that chance on Kyler.
But the Rams, what did the Rams do? They went out and got Whitworth as the left tackle, a veteran to be able to take some of those scary thoughts away from the young quarterback who got a hit an awful lot as a rookie. But when they brought in their head coach, just like Arizona brings in Cliff Kingsbury, the head coach was emphatic that Goff is a star. I can make this guy a star. In the initial meetings and everything, that's what he sold Stan Kroenke and the general Les Snead, the general manager there, on. What did Cliff Kingsbury say to Steve Keim? Because he's already said great things about Kyler, but what did he say privately? And I believe that he said those positive things privately that have led Arizona to exploring, should we take him? They need offensive line help. I don't care how fast he is. Josh Rosen got hit too much last year. Now, you're talking about a way for a quarterback not to be successful. That's to have people in his face when he's in his rookie season.
Well, that's my concern, is even if I'm wrong about Kyler being too short to play in the league, even if Kyler's going to be an excellent player, are you setting him up to fail immediately? Are you setting him up to have the football knocked out of him, which can happen to a 6'4 guy, much less a 5'10 guy? That you might have cost yourself the ability to get Kyler Murray, even if you love him, by the mistakes you made over the last few years. Because if you are now going to spend consecutive first-round picks on a quarterback position when nobody thinks the Cardinals are a quarterback away, then you are the timeline of this team actually getting back on its feet. Right. And what I consider a very difficult division is so long. To me, they missed their window on this last year. And now you have to do the best given the decisions you've already made.
Right. Don't further squander the investment. Yes. I fully get that. All right, fellas, coming up, the Celtics. Can they turn it around? It's not looking good for them. That's next on First Things First. Welterweight world champion Showtime Sean Porter defends his belt for the first time live in primetime Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, only on Fox.
Sean Porter, let's do this. That's my guy right there, man.
Time now for Say What? Now, we know the Lakers lost to the Suns Saturday, and they are 4.5 games out of the eighth seed, with LeBron in jeopardy of missing the playoffs for the first time since 2005. Well, I guess you could say lifelong fan Snoop Dogg. Well, he's a little bit upset. Say what?
Get LeBron some help, because these goofballs ain't going to do. They sorry. They suck. I'm selling my booth right now. I got a booth for the next 2 years, 3 years. This year, y'all can have it. $5 for the booth to the Laker games. $5 is the price.
It's Uncle Snoop, see? That's your guy.
Man.
He said his booth was $5.
I'm just going to tell y'all old school. Snoop gave up his suite in Staples Center for a nickel bag. Because that's what it, $5, that's nickel bag, Uncle Snoop. Yeah. I'm with you, bro.
Right,
man, they blew Snoop's high, man. Snoop was, man, he went to the game, they blew his high.
He had to get focused.
Oh, man, they snapped all that.
He told no lies there. And goofballs is maybe the perfect way to describe some of the Lakers players Saturday night against the Suns.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous. Yeah. I don't blame him for being frustrated.
Man, I'm so glad we didn't move the show to L.A., man. I was like, LeBron's going to L.A., we're moving the show. Thank God, man, we got smart bosses and everything.
Yeah.
As a Southerner.
How's your significant other feel about us not moving the show to L.A.?
Now, she ain't no fans of him.
We ain't going to talk about that. I just like that he called him sorry. All right, it's time now for some stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. Over the weekend, Andre Iguodala says he doesn't think his teammate Steph Curry gets the respect he deserves. Put some respect on it. He also said Steph is the second best point guard of all time. Now, Nick, does your list match up with Iggy's?
How you know Nick got a list?
Oh, I mean, somebody told me that. Somebody told me that, Chris.
You're right.
The producer told me.
You're right.
I agree with Iggy that Steph is underrated.
True.
And that Steph's impact on the sport of basketball, not just the NBA, has the reverberations are felt. What Draymond said, when you go to high school games, you see guys trying to be Steph that can't be Steph. All that's true. He's not the second best point guard of all time. Right now, he's fourth or fifth, but he is climbing, and could he become the second best point guard of all time behind only Magic? Absolutely, he could, and he's probably pacing towards that, but he's not that quite yet.
You know, to me, Nick, you know I'm very, very fond of Isaiah Thomas.
Yes.
Magic Johnson, very, very fond of him. Brother happened to play with both of them. If you're going to talk about point guards all time, another guy that's underrated, Oscar Robertson. Right. So for me, those are the four people that would be in this conversation. So for me, I'm not going to make a list. But Steph is underrated. Well, I do agree with you on that.
I will make the list. Steph, that is your top four of all time. Magic, Oscar, Isaiah, Steph.
I would typically like to have five in there.
Okay,
I work with this weird guy who does eight and three.
Okay, well then John Stockton's got to be talked about.
Oh,
Jason
Lord.
Kidd's out
Y'all,
there.
We're gonna be here all day on to the NFL.
Well, no, free only till 9:30.
Well, there you go. Officially begins next week, and it's been reported that unless something really messes up at the end here, Nick Foles is gonna become a Jaguar. The Jags are expected to release Blake Bortles. CeCe, how much of an upgrade is this for Jacksonville?
I hate to tell you this, Ebony. Mm. I don't know.
You got really mad at me for saying that on TV.
I don't know. I mean, is Doug Peterson going to go there and call the plays?
No, he's not.
Are they going to have the type of balance they're going to get their tight end involved in? They're going to throw to the running backs? Because that's what Nick Foles does. They need more talent offensively for Nick Foles to be able to thrive. So, I don't know.
Listen, he's an upgrade, but he is not where the Jaguars should be spending their resources. He's not enough of an upgrade. The Jaguars made a decision with Blake Bortles a year ago. They didn't have to extend him. Because of that, if you do go out and get Nick Foles, now you're going to have one of the most expensive quarterback rooms in all of football. for it to be Nick Foles and Blake Bortles, that's not quality team building. But I get it. The defense damn near mutinied last year, so you've got to do something other than Blake.
And
there's not
still
enough to get him
back.
They're
still a top five defense, Nick.
Sure.
We're going to cut Blake Bortles, pay that $6 million against the cap. He's not even going to be with the team this year.
Okay. All right. If they do that, then I don't mind the move as much.
Okay.
All right. He don't know. Over the weekend after the MIT Sloan Conference, Larry Fitzgerald was asked about the Antonio Brown situation. Now, he said he doesn't think that AB realizes just how good he's had it playing with Big Ben. CeCe, what do you think of Fitz's comments?
Man, I've had hundreds and hundreds of conversations with Larry Fitzgerald since he was a kid. 14 years old, I began to mentor him in Minneapolis, had an influence on where he went to school, all the things that he's done since then. I've never heard him talk negative about a player like this. And he mentioned it. Him and AB are friends.
Mm-hmm.
Like he, but I've never heard Larry Fitzgerald. But because most of our conversations throughout our years together have been about his career is very similar to mine.
Yep.
Playing with quarterbacks that were not that good. Playing off the NFL, the mainstream of the NFL, still being very, very successful. So when Larry says this, it's something that I've always known. Don't take for granted playing with a great quarterback.
Listen, you've known Larry his whole life, basically, and so tell me if you think I'm wrong here. This was not jealousy, but I bet Larry there's some elements of Larry watching AB and saying, man, do you know what it's like on the other side of the world?
He played college football at Pittsburgh, and they shared the same facility with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
So Larry loves the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And so where he said, your whole career you've had a Hall of Fame quarterback, even if the guy's a jerk. I've had some really nice guys play quarterback, but they stink. Like, Larry is going to have the statistical profile of one of the three greatest receivers ever, and he's going to have done it with 4 years of quality quarterbacking in his whole career.
Yeah.
So that's what he's talking about with Antonio Brown is switch them spots
right.
A decade ago and see the numbers AB puts up. I think he'd still be quite good. And see what Larry Fitzgerald does in that offense with that quarterback.
I think Mark Schlereff, our colleague here, he summed it up. In life, you just try not to grow up to be a turd.
Mm-hmm.
He tweeted that.
He did tweet there that.
I thought it was worth repeating.
Clearly.
Moving on down to the Cowboys, who, despite not having won a Super Bowl in 23 years. Guess what? They're still the most valuable franchise in sports. Next season, they're expected to return the majority of the same team who won the NFC East in 2018. However, owner Jerry Jones knows time is of the essence.
This is my 30th combine, and I don't have 30 more. And we talked the other night. I've made them all, and I made them all. And it's a big thing to evaluate and put the team together. So I'm running out of combines.
CeCe, what do the Cowboys have to do in order to be competitive? I mean, seriously competitive for a Super Bowl this season?
Jerry is right. The combine is a huge part of building the team, but it's not going to be a huge part of where the Cowboys go.
Nope.
If they're a playoff team trying to go to the next level, it's going to involve a couple things. Restructuring the contract of those offensive linemen, several of them the highest paid at their position, allowing those resources to be able to sign people that you know. You have a franchise tag on Lawrence, defensive end. He's got to be signed. You need a playmaker safety that's got to be signed to this defense. You got to sign Amari Cooper, and Ezekiel Elliott is going to get a contract. So, yeah, you talk about the draft. They've done great in the draft. They have stockpiled this team with very, very good young players. But the next step for the Dallas Cowboys, to me, is not about the draft. It's about the players that they do have. Can they be more effective offensively? Can they get a tight end involved? I know they signed Jason Witten. That's not the move that I would have wanted. And they need a playmaker on the back end of that defense to be able to help them out. This is a good football team, not a great football team, Nick.
And you have to remember, as Coach Mangini says all the time, the next season doesn't begin where the last season ended. So just because Dak played his best football he's played in a couple years, the last half of last year, does not mean he picks it up from there. And this defense is going to look different. Randy Gregory and David Irving being suspended is an enormous blow for this football team, and that is even assuming you get DeMarcus Lawrence back. This defense carried them through large portions of last season. You can't just bake that in. This isn't the Jags that in a down year, okay, it's a down year for our defense. We're the sixth best defense. I don't think the Cowboys are that. I think they need to add personnel like an Earl Thomas or such as an Earl Thomas just to maintain their defense where it was last year. Leighton Vander Esch was outstanding as a rookie. That doesn't mean he's going to not have some type of sophomore slump. And so then on the offensive side of the ball, yes, you need the offense to do what it was doing over the last 8 games of the regular season. And that means you need Dak Prescott to level up. You need Dak Prescott to put together the first complete season he would have had since his rookie year. I believe you have a few things you know. You know Zeke's going to be excellent, right. And I think you know Amari Cooper is going to be a quality number one receiver. You don't know what you're getting from the tight end spot, and amazingly, you don't know what level of offensive line you have.
No.
You know that they can be excellent,
yep.
But we Tyron Smith hadn't been the best left tackle in football for 3 years.
But been paid like
it. Right. Travis Frederick didn't play last season.
Yes.
Now, Zach Martin, I think, has maintained best guard in the league, but that's one guy. So there are a lot of question marks there. Do the Cowboys have the ability to be a 12-win team? Absolutely, yes. But that means they do everything they did well last year
right.
as well, and the quarterback gets better, and they have some of those small tweaks that we saw they were unable to make last offseason, bringing in Tavon Austin. That didn't really work out. The different things they tried to add didn't quite fit the way they hoped it would.
Personnel question for y'all. Do y'all see that coach, Jason Garrett, do you see him coaching in a Super Bowl?
Oh, that's a hell of a question.
I was looking at him, and I. It just,
and I'm not going to give you. I don't know, but based on the NFC, the way the NFC is stacked, I don't see the Dallas Cowboys in the next couple years getting to the Super Bowl. Not only is it stacked with good franchises, but good quarterbacks, and to me, they're not explosive enough offensively. There's some pieces. I don't get better offensively when I add a slow tight end. All right? I don't get better. I didn't help Amari Cooper out. So I don't think so in the next couple years. And I think that right now in this NFL, the next couple years is really the only way we can judge
and
that.
If you listen to the Cowboys and Stephen Jones and what they're saying about Jason Garrett, if they don't make a Super Bowl in the next few years, he's not going to have a few years after that to have the opportunity. I don't think the Cowboys are going to make a Super Bowl, as Chris said, in the next couple of years. And I don't think it's going to be because of Jason Garrett.
Okay.
But therefore, the answer is no. And I don't think Jason Garrett, I think Jerry's wrong when he says if we were to move on from Jason Garrett, you'd have a long list of teams waiting to hire him. He might be the right coach for the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's the right coach for the generic NFL team with the direction the league is going in 2019.
Fair enough. Now, yesterday, the Celtics suffered another loss. The Rockets and James Harden. Boston now has lost 5 of their last 6 games, and the road's not going to look any better anytime soon. Tomorrow, they begin a 4-game road trip against the Warriors, Kings, Lakers, and Clippers. Nick Wright, is there any chance that the Celtics can turn around this season?
I mean, there's a chance, but it is incredibly unlikely, and there is no evidence they will. Kyrie missed a game on January 23rd. From that moment forward, the Celtics have played in 17 games. 6 of them he hadn't played, they're 6-0. 11 of them he has played, they're 3-8. And there are some ugly losses in those 8 losses. The game, they were getting mollywopped by the Rockets yesterday. They got it within 7 in the fourth quarter. Coincidentally or not, they went on that run with Kyrie watching from the bench. Mm-hmm. Looked a lot like the Celtics team last year. Jaylen Brown is swallowing people up at midcourt.
Yep.
Marcus Smart's getting deflections, flying around everywhere, and they weren't able to get over the hump, which is not surprising because when you're down 28 minutes into the second half, you're not supposed to come back from
that. The energy you use in getting back, you typically don't have any extra to be able to finish them off.
And you saw there were a few times where they could have cut it to 4 or 5 if they just get a defensive rebound, and Nene is good on the glass. P.J. Tucker and the Rockets held them off. But for the Celtics, this is a systemic issue right now. They do not look anything like what the talent on the team says it should be. Jason Tatum yesterday had missed open shot after missed open shot, then started press and started to take bad shots. Terry Rozier gets fouled on a 3, goes to the line, misses all 3 free throws. Like, the Celtics team, by any way you look at it right now, is the 9th or 10th best team in the NBA. That's all they are. And in the NBA, the 9th or 10th best team never goes on a run in the postseason. And that's the only way to salvage the season.
Yeah, the only way to salvage the season is they win a series. They can't lose. We know they're going to be in the playoffs, but they can't lose in that first round. and where they're sitting at right now, those first round matchups are going to be unbelievable. If the Celtics were in the situation where they were not playing well and they had the same record, but say, for instance, if they was Houston and Harden was hurt and we knew he was going to come back, we'd be like, maybe, okay, when he comes back, they'll be able to add. When LeBron, right, when he was in Cleveland, not that he was hurt, right, but we had the type of confidence that LeBron has dominated the East. The Celtics don't have that. This is a team that does not like each other. Now, they have a nice roster, and if we didn't see last year's playoffs, we wouldn't be having as much hope for them right now. Gordon Hayward is not nearly the player. Now, Kyrie individually, he's had a very good season, one of the best of his career, if not the best. But as a team, they don't play well together. There's less ball movement. There's more bad shots. Everyone needs to get their shots now, so now guys will take a shot that's not, well, I get the ball back, so let me shoot the ball now. Right. So their shot selection has not been good this year. This team, they're still a top 10 defensive team, so that, but to me, Kyrie Irving is a big question, and Brad Stevens. Where's that great coach? Where's that great coach, one of the best in the league? I heard people on TV mention it, not only on this show, other shows. Hey, man, this guy won the top five. Get out my face with that mess. Because right now, right, if you were a top five coach, you would see your thumbprint on this team by doing something. What has he done? He's done nothing.
We had one of the guys that actually works security in our office building ask me, I thought, a really interesting question when we were walking over a couple days ago, and he said, why?
Where's your badge?
What? Okay, I always leave my badge. That's neither here nor there. But after that, after I was like, can you buzz me in real quick? He asked me, he said, why did it work when Isaiah Thomas was there and not when Kyrie was there? Because that was a ball-centric or one-player-centric offense. And I thought about that a lot this week because I think it's a really interesting point because they made the conference finals 2 years ago when IT was a one-man offense unto himself. The guys around Isaiah Thomas that year were totally, they knew their role. Jay Crowder knew.
Yep.
Avery Bradley knew. Marcus Smart at that point in his career knew. Jaylen Brown, rookie, knew. Listen, IT is going to be the offense. We're going to have to get rebounds, find a way to get wide open, yep, shots, and play tough defense. It's different when the guys around Kyrie are Jason Tatum, who thinks he's going to be a star. Yep. Jaylen Brown waiting on his first real contract. Terry Rozier waiting on his first real contract. It's harder for those guys to play selfless basketball when they know Kyrie's going to suck up, even if it's in a positive way, 25% of the possessions.
It's hard for people to buy in like that and sacrifice their own game unless they like you. And that's what we saw with IT a couple years ago. That's when America fell in love with IT. That's when the Celtics fell in love. And then you had all these veteran players. Man, I'm going to buy in because this guy and his story, that's why he was in the MVP conversation. He had a sensational season, but his teammates liked him. And when your teammates like you, it's easier for them to do. You know something? I don't need that shot. You know something? Right. I'll guard this guy. I will take this charge. I will do the small things. And the Celtics don't have that now.
There's also, I was going to say, I can definitely see your point, Chris, about them liking IT more. It also just seems like there's a misalignment of interest going on with the Celtics right now.
Absolutely right.
Versus an alignment that I heard Nick speaking about when IT was there.
Yeah, I try to mentor guys all the time, and a lot of it has to do with dating. I tell them, man, don't be trying to look at that next girl. Put everything you got into this one.
That's right.
Even though she's got some faults and everything, because you got faults yourself.
You're right.
Man, Kyrie Irving is looking over at New York, side eye. He's looking at her.
And Terry Rozier's looking at his contract. Mm-hmm. And Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, one other thing.
Are looking at their future.
Right, their future. One other thing. I have not bought into the idea that, and most people have, though, that the Lakers' season got ruined when the young guys heard they might be traded for Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, though, think that was a fracturing point for them. If it was a fracturing point for the Lakers, how much did that same effect have on the kids in Boston? Who, even if they weren't by name, how many people, credible reports, Mannix and others, said everyone's on the table? Yeah, there's only 12 guys on a roster. There's only four that have real trade value for the Celtics. Jaylen Brown knows that's him. Jason Tatum knows that's him. So if it affected one team, the timeline of the Celtics going into this tailspin lines up with it affecting them as well.
All right, coming up, should Kyler Murray really be the top draft pick in the NFL? We're going to debate it next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Former NFL quarterback Ryan Leaf joins us. Thanks
up,
so
man?
Much for joining us.
Good morning.
Of course.
Can always come on my show. Always.
Always. Oh, it's my show. My show. You hear that?
He's been doing that for 2 years.
Okay. You're gonna
Don't bother me.
Antonio Brown.
That's what the boss
has
told me. Hey, Chris, man, tell the people that's your show.
AB's made it known that he wants out of Pittsburgh. And it seems like a resolution may be near, with Brown being due a roster bonus on March 17th. The Raiders, Titans, and Washington are three teams that reportedly have expressed the most interest. Over the weekend, 11-time Pro Bowl wide receiver Larry Fitzgerald was asked about the situation.
No, I love AB. Mr. Big Chess is a good friend of mine. But I don't think he's going about it the right way, personally. To be able to play with an all-time quarterback like he's able to play with, I don't think he understands how good he has it. You know, it's it could get tough out there. Yeah.
All right, Ryan, what do you think about Fitz saying that AB doesn't understand how good he has it?
Well, I think there's anybody who deserves the opportunity to say something like that. It's probably Larry Fitzgerald. My biggest concern with Antonio Bryant is, or sorry, Antonio Brown is, is his behavior, right? There's no accountability to it. We forget he's talking about things he can't control in Pittsburgh. None of it. Ben, the ownership, all the stuff. We have yet to hear from him on what he did, the things that he needs to take accountability for. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to change if you go somewhere else.
No, we did hear from him, right?
I know, but we did no accountability.
Okay.
We heard from him, and nothing we've heard. And the thing about being traded is that you have no opportunity as a free agent to go in, meet with the people who you're going to go to. When you're traded, you just go. And you have to accept what you bought with that trade. And with that being seen, he's got every opportunity with these interviews to stand up and do something differently, and he just hasn't done it.
Antonio, in so many ways, if he handles this differently, I would be, and a lot of people be on his side. Because I don't think Big Ben is a great teammate. I don't think Big Ben's a great leader. And I don't think the Steelers have handled Big Ben the right way. Mm. But up to and including this weekend, when Antonio's on the shop with Maverick and LeBron, and Maverick asked him, so what happened there? He's like, man, I wasn't feeling well. I had a bit of an injury. I told Coach Tomlin, and Coach Tomlin told me, just go home. I was like, go home? And then they're laughing, and he said, at no point has he come out and said, hey, let me address this. Of course I should have shown up that last week. I screwed that up. My frustrations got the most of me. There are ways that he could, at any given time, try to turn this thing around. He meets with the owner of the team, Art Rooney, seemingly I think the Pittsburgh reporters, see, you shared a column yesterday by Ron Cook saying this, that the thought process was Art Rooney got to him and said, listen, we're going to trade you, but just chill for a little bit because you're hurting your trade value.
Right.
Instead,
we'll take care of you.
He just keeps going out of his way to weaken the Steelers' negotiating position. And it is very hard for me, maybe this is superficial, but it's very hard for me to take seriously someone that says, I don't want the attention, when you're saying it with a dyed blonde mustache and blue hair. Like, you got to be kidding me. And people can look however they want, but you can't say, I don't want the eyes on me, when you are, every action you make is begging for the eyes to be on.
There's a number of things to react to. Number one, Larry Fitzgerald. I do this on occasion with Larry. I go through his phone. I say, who do you have in your Rolodex in the NFL? Every player that you would want to know is in his phone. Quarterbacks, wide receivers, like, this guy is universally loved and in contact with the league. No one in the recent history, especially as a wide receiver, has a better reputation amongst the players and amongst front office people and coaches than Larry Fitzgerald. So you're talking about from a respect factor. Let's go over to the Pittsburgh Steelers side. And this is the part that upsets me more, because you have players in the locker room like Ben, players who've established themselves. They've been there. The organization loves them. And they have a different set of rules. That's everywhere you go. Art Rooney, you mentioned, he's a great owner. You know who else was a great owner? His dad. Who else was a great owner before him?
His granddad.
His grandfather. So he shows up to the Steelers practice facility every single day because they're trying to win a championship. So when you have a meeting like this with someone who you should have a great deal of respect for, and he tells you, we're going to take care of it, we are going to trade you, we're going to grant that. You know something? You don't even have to come back to Pittsburgh to meet you. I'm going to fly to South Florida. We'll meet in an airport somewhere that's very convenient for you to get in the car and drive up from South Florida. So not only is he had the most respected player that we've seen this generation, Larry Fitzgerald, say negative things, and now he's disrespecting the ownership of the Pittsburgh Steelers. He don't have no respect for the game. Guy talks about, I got $30 million. You're 30 years old. You think that's enough to get you to the grave? There's all kind of horrible stories of athletes being broke, fool. That ain't no whole bunch of money in the real world. So, oh, I don't need football. But every dime you ever made, what was it off of? I know where you come from. I know your story. So it's amazing to me how much he's changed as a person. And I just can't. Larry Fitzgerald, if he speaks out against me, man, that would cause me pause. And what he's done to the Pittsburgh Steelers, Mike Tomlin and the Rooneys, that's the reason why I believe this will not end well for him. That Tennessee Titans with Marcus Mariota throwing to him. Oh, okay.
Where do you think, Ryan, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Where do you think it went so sideways?
Well, I think any player who makes it to that level, there's a narcissistic personality that takes over, right? I mean, either you develop a personality like Larry Fitzgerald where you're grateful for every opportunity that's been granted, or you become entitled in a way where you think you deserve more and you become resentful. I mean, you hear other people getting other things and you go, why isn't that happening for me? Mm-hmm. I contribute more and more. I'm the most successful. Then you also hear Mike Tomlin telling other players he won't be around if he can't contribute anymore. Once he can do whatever the hell he wants, but once he stops contributing, then he's out the door. If that's in the locker room,
yeah, bad message.
That's a bad message.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. I understand the narcissism. I think we've all seen that in the league. My question is this, y'all, and this is for everybody. I'm going to take it around the table. What's the strategy, right? So he's doing interview after interview. He's getting a very loud narrative out there for whatever you may think of it. That narrative is out there, and he's doubling down on it every single opportunity he gets. What is the potential upside? Because he is weakening the Steelers' negotiating value to trade him and get something for him. What's his end game?
I don't think first you can talk about the end game. You have to realize he was in a bad relationship with Ben Roethlisberger. They didn't like each other. He right. talked about, I've been here a long time. I've been to Ben's house one time. He's been to my house one time. I don't know his kids. He don't know my kids. Right. To me, that's criminal because that dude got the ball right. and he's going to give it to me. That's criminal right there. So what's he trying to accomplish? I told Nick a long time ago, he wants a new contract. He wants some guarantees. He knew he didn't like Ben, but the only way to get those guarantees was to get out of Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's getting ready to extend Ben Roethlisberger. Right. So the end game was to get more guarantees out of Pittsburgh, Ryan.
Yeah, the idea that once you have what you have, that you keep working for it is always different from player to player within this league, right? I believe that money, power, and prestige made me successful. I don't know where I learned that from TV or whatnot, but I do think players believe that when they get to that point. And you have to have a better understanding of that, that this can all go away. And unless you're open-minded, the psyche of an elite athlete is incredibly fragile. For somebody who's so powerful and does such great things on the football field, mm-hmm. it's a fragile psyche that we see break all the time.
And I think his psyche was broken when Ben told one of the family secrets. Hey, this dude broke off his route. This dude ran the wrong route.
And he brought that up in the interview with LeBron and Maverick, where he says, man, right. he threw the ball to the damn D-line, and what do you want me to do? You could tell he's still holding on to it. Yep. But to answer your question, his initial goal mm-hmm. was get out of Pittsburgh and get somewhere where, as C mentioned, they're going to give me more guaranteed money. He even tweeted, if you got guaranteed money, call me.
Right.
But everything
too.
He has done,
call right. at least
everything
two,
he's done since then has worked against his purposes. And that's why it's illogical to you. Like, you, because you're saying, okay, if that's where, if you want to end up here, right. why do you keep driving this direction?
Right.
And it's because he has not had a strategy, he has not had a plan, and it, whatever elements of a strategy or plan he has had have been wrong. In that same interview with LeBron and Maverick, Anthony Davis is there. Mm-hmm. Anthony Davis has a strategy and a plan, mm-hmm. and he handled himself in that interview one way. He's handled himself publicly mm-hmm. one way. Mm-hmm. Even if you disagree with what he's done, he at least has a cogent idea of how to get it accomplished.
Yes.
AB's just firing everywhere, yeah. and it's not. And he's talking to anyone that'll listen, and he's not giving you a consistent message.
You got to help yourself sometime. All right, Ryan, we want you to stick around. Coming up, should Kyler Murray really be the first pick overall? We'll discuss it next on First Things First.
Hey,
Just One is your destination for the day's best sports shows. Tune in for the biggest personalities on the biggest stories. Of course, we'll get you started right here on First Things First. You can catch it Monday through Friday on FS1. All right, back here with Ryan Leaf. Now let's talk about Kyler Murray. Now, he didn't do any drills at Combine, but he did surpass the important measurement expectation. Now, there's a new report that says Kyler's almost universally believed to be the number one pick in the draft. Kyler was asked about how he'd feel to go number one.
Obviously, I mean, I'm a competitor. I love the game. To be the number one pick would be, you know, that's a kid's dream come true. So if my name was called number one, that would I'd be ready to go for sure. I've never been the biggest guy on the field. I'm always the smallest guy on the field. And I've said it multiple times, you know, I feel like I'm the most impactful guy on the field and the best player on the field of all time. So, you know, that's just the confidence that, you know, I have in myself, you know, my teammates have in me. And I've always had to play at this height. It's never, you know, I don't know. Everybody's trying to make it out to be something. But at the same time, you know, I just go out there and play the game that I love.
All right, Ryan, you've obviously played quarterback in this league. Should Kyler Murray go number one?
I don't know if he should, but this day and age, he's going to go number one, right? I mean, we saw what happened last year. When you fall in love with somebody at that position, it doesn't matter. Baker Mayfield, for a lot of people, didn't have necessarily a first-round grade by a lot of teams. Mm-hmm. John Dorsey and the Cleveland Browns loved him. And all you need is one.
Yep.
Cliff Kingsbury already told everybody he loves him a long time ago. And then when you buy into a Cliff Kingsbury type of coach, the idea of placing yourself with a quarterback, this is just doubling down by the Arizona Cardinals. If they decide to stay at that pick, which I think they're going to, this is just doubling down on what they believe they need to be successful with in Cliff Kingsbury, and that's with Kyler Murray.
All right, so this, drawing on your experience, because I think we all agree, if he's 6'2", everyone says he's the number one pick.
Right.
What are the limitations he's going to see? Because, Chris, you made this point earlier, and I think it's a really important one. Yeah, okay, so I've been playing this position, this height, my whole life. That's great. There's a lot of guys that were 6'7 power forwards in college basketball that don't make it to the NBA. They've been 6'7 their whole life. The people you're up against get bigger. They get stronger. They get faster. So even though you've been this height, high school and college,
the NBA, the court gets smaller. And in the NFL, that field gets smaller.
So what are the real limitations he's going to have to deal with that no first-round pick has ever had to deal with because he'll be the shortest of them all?
Well, that's something I can't relate to. But I also can relate to the idea that I'm 6'6" and the prototypical pocket quarterback, and I was unsuccessful because of what I dealt with from Sunday to Sunday, how I dealt with the game, how I took accountability, how all those things that came along. So he's an elite athlete. The fact that you can be drafted in the top 10 of the Major League Baseball draft as well as the possible first pick in the NFL draft, Heisman Trophy winner, there's just something different about him. He may be that unique unicorn. It just may be. But it's going to be more difficult because of how much shorter you are. But what he does on the football field, you cannot deny that. So you have to take that chance. The fear of missing out on a franchise quarterback, because franchise quarterbacks win championships, period. That's no matter what you do. You find a running back, you find a quarterback that can do it for you. And if he doesn't pan out with the rookie salary cap issue, you can miss on a quarterback and still survive.
I don't know if you can miss on a quarterback in back-to-back years, though, because that's what they would be doing.
They would
And that's the one other thing. I'm sorry to interrupt, Steve, but what do you think of Rosen? Like, would you give up on Josh Rosen right now?
I wouldn't, but I also don't think he fits what Cliff Kingsbury wants to do. And that's a different thing. You hire a new head coach. It worked for Jared Goff because I think Sean McVay came in. But if you look, Jared Goff kind of had to bend to Sean McVay's will. They run a ton of play action. He was not a play. He had to learn how to go under center, play action fake, flip those hips, turn around, have somebody in his face, and still be accurate enough to complete it. I don't know if Josh Rosen has that, but I do know that he may get an opportunity to end up in a place where it's going to be a better fit for everybody around. I know the Giants are a thought. I know some other teams are, the Redskins are a thought. I also know that I've put out the interesting concept of him being somehow traded to San Diego or to Los Angeles and learning behind Phillip Rivers, who may have a year or two in the mix. That's something that's interesting that could play out. I love what happens when the season ends of college football to when the draft happens. There are so many things that go on, and agents who move people up the ladder. We saw Patrick Mahomes do it 2 years ago and see how that panned out. It will be interesting how it plays out. I like what I see from Kyler Murray when I watch film. It's the film. You just always have to worry about somebody that small because you get hit like nobody's business. They're doing different things to protect the quarterback in the pocket and protect it from the NFL standpoint as well.
I think that timing, Ryan, has a lot to do with this. I think that he's very, very fortunate. When he made the decision to transfer to the University of Oklahoma, he had no clue that Baker Mayfield was going to be that dynamic player for another year, win the Heisman Trophy, but also, maybe more importantly, that they also changed coaches at Oklahoma. They got off of Bob Stoops and went to who they have now that a lot of NFL teams They respect that head coach more. Bob Stoops is a great coach. Right. I like Bob. But he's a defensive coach.
Lincoln Riley's different for the quarterbacks.
And it's amazing that now, because of the timing of Lincoln Riley, Baker Mayfield, because Baker Mayfield benefited from people missing on Russell Wilson. Mm. That's why he went in the third. He should have had a second-round grade, maybe the bottom of the first grade, but because of height. Baker Mayfield, last year at this time, they were not in love with him. But because Cleveland fell in love, then he had a great year. So the timing of Kyler coming after those two things lead me to, man, the NFL's changing. Mm-hmm. They're going to give a guy a chance at 5'10 to start at quarterback. And I believe that the Arizona Cardinals, because of the timing with their head coach, and they want to double down to ensure him to get his guy, mm-hmm. that's why he's going to be able to benefit. The timing has been impeccable the last several years.
I am so glad you brought this up, Chris Carter, because that's my thinking. I'm looking at Baker Mayfield. I'm saying, well, I think we sat at this table and had this conversation a year ago and talked about him being shorter than some quarterbacks and all of this stuff. But someone brought this to my attention, that Baker's got just, he's a more solid build, right? He's just a little bit of a bigger guy. Well, I want y'all's take on that impact, because Kyler's got just a slighter frame, right?
And this is the reason why Kyler would be such an outlier. Baker is the second shortest quarterback drafted in the first round in the last 15 years. The only one shorter is Manziel. Mm-hmm. And he's 3 inches taller than Kyler Murray. So, like, that's where, when we're talking about a short quarterback, this is, I can only say it so many times, the shortest quarterback ever drafted will be Kyler Murray. Mm-hmm. And so it's one thing for 6'1 and an eighth Baker Mayfield to go from a mid-first-round pick to the first overall pick. It's another thing for a guy who, midway through the year, the consensus on Kyler Murray is, amazing season, of course he's going to go play baseball, because you can't play in the NFL at his size. And now he's going to be the number one overall pick? Now it seems like that's the overwhelming likelihood? That's crazy to me.
You can't reason with these people, though. And I know you love to, mm-hmm. but you cannot reason with these people. If you fall in love with somebody, yes. you know, you could be as rational as you can be when you talk to them. But if they believe in this, if they think this is going to make the most news, this sometimes is it's a popularity contest. If you're a Heisman Trophy mm-hmm. winner and you are the man of the moment, why not be yes. the first pick in the NFL draft? People forget that the first pick in the NFL draft can be made as soon as the league season starts March 13th. So the Cardinals could simply make the draft pick on the 13th and start moving forward with that. But why don't they? Mm. They want their 15 minutes. They want their name dragged through the whole time, people understanding about the Cardinals, the Cardinals, the Cardinals, mm-hmm. and then draft day comes. Because we learned about that with Troy Aikman in 1989. Dallas picked him before the draft even happened. Mm-hmm. You know, and I learned this in my draft, too, when Peyton and I were going head-to-head on that deal, that they could draft you here, but they want the 15 minutes. There's a reason why they don't draft you the first 2 seconds when you have your 15 right. minutes on the stage. They want their time on the stage, and he's the most popular guy at the dance right now, and they're gonna take him.
One thing that we can guarantee, not the height, not the hand size, the kid is a winner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The kid is a winner.
Yeah, I think everybody likes him a whole lot. Ryan Leaf, thank you so much
for
hanging with us this morning. Yeah. Yeah. Coming up, is the Lakers season practically over after this disastrous weekend they had? That's coming up next on First Things First. Sunday, the Monster Energy Cup Series heads to Phoenix as the world's best drivers battle it out in the desert. It all starts at 3:30 Eastern, only on Fox and the Fox Sports app. All right, we've got FS1 analyst Chris Broussard joining us. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Good to be here.
Good to see you.
Happy Mardi Gras.
Yes, that's
right. Cajun brother.
My man.
Okay.
All right. You know that's how we do. Let's talk Lakers. Now, they lost two games this weekend, including one to the Phoenix Suns. Yeah, the same Suns who've got the worst record in the league. Mm-hmm, them. The Lakers are now 4.5 games out of the eighth seed. LeBron's in jeopardy of missing the playoffs for the first time since 2005. After the game, he was asked about just how frustrated he is. Chris Broussard, what do you make of the Lakers' two losses over the weekend?
Well, the first game, Milwaukee, I mean, they played well early on. Mm-hmm. And as somebody that picked the Lakers to make the playoffs, I'm not speaking as a fan, but as an analyst, you know, what we want is to be right. So I picked the Lakers to make
it's
the playoffs.
Important.
So I was.
I tried to tell him, please. It's about. He thinks that just a name. No, bro.
That's
it's
the
a
goal.
Lifestyle,
right?
So
as somebody pulling for the Lakers to make the playoffs because I want to be right, I was encouraged initially. But what the problem against Milwaukee is the same problem they've had all year. They can't close. despite having LeBron, they can't close. You saw it in their first three games of the season. Portland, Houston, San Antonio. They had the chance to win all those games, couldn't close. And here's the stat. They are one of five teams in the NBA that has been outscored by 80 or more points in the fourth quarter. And the other four teams are the worst four in the league. Phoenix, New York, Cleveland, and Chicago.
Yep.
So, and then on top of that, how many games have we watched them build a nice third quarter lead and then let it go?
Well, listen, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the Milwaukee game, the problem in that Milwaukee game has been the problem basically since the last couple months, certainly since LeBron came back from injury, which is that whatever lead they build in the first quarter or third quarter is given away instantly at the beginning of the second or the beginning of the fourth because Luke Walton inexplicably insists on playing LeBron and Ingram the entirety of the first and the third, so they are both sitting at the beginning of the second and the beginning of the fourth. In the Milwaukee game, the lineup he ran out there to start the second and fourth, it was KCP, Hart, Kuzma, JaVale wasn't even out there. Muscala and one other guy. It doesn't matter. LeBron and Ingram both on the – Rondo is the other one. They were outscored by 15 points in a minute 55 in those two quarters combined before you made an adjustment. There's the difference. And then at the end of the game, when they have opportunities, they cannot close it out. They're up two. They get a stop. LeBron turns it over. They go down. They have the terrible inbounds play with KCP that lost the game. It's disaster against
them. It's hard to close when you can't shoot free throws.
Well, free throws. They can't shoot the basketball.
Shoot,
they're one of the worst shooting teams from the three-point right. line. They're one of the worst free throw shooting teams. All right, and they're a bad defensive team. How are you going to win an NBA game? Right, so, yes, right. We did pick. The only one amongst those is Mannix, a friend of the show, Chris. He picked them not to make the playoffs. I thought that was more a little thing at LeBron, the East Coast, Cleveland type thing, because he's been punch Boston, drunk the last several years. But Mannix is trending to be right in this. And to me, it's not about, it's what do we see? Mm-hmm. They don't look like a playoff team. All right, they do not shoot the basketball well, and that's based on how this roster was put together. Now, there's a lot of teams in the NBA that they looked at their team, say, 3 weeks before the trade deadline and say, what can we do to get better? The Los Angeles Lakers are one of the few teams that were in contention that did not get better at the trade deadline. The moves they made did not help them. They did not get better as a shooting team. The continuity, we don't know what type of lineup. Now they seem to be forced to play these players.
They can't play a center because they traded away their best center for Mike Muscala.
Now what they were trying to do is correct the problem of not having any shooting. So they went out and got two shooters, Bullock and Muscala. Bullock's had his moments. He's been okay. I look, Muscala, I get the thought process. But Zubac was like you said,
center.
He was their best offensive center.
And Muscala,
center.
If you traded for him, you got the plane.
Right.
Like, you can't. Like you don't have any type
but
of...
But they tried, and then you saw he couldn't do it.
They don't... Listen, the front office has done terribly. The head coach has been, to me, a disaster, and he's going to get fired. But that might excuse losing to Milwaukee, blowing a game against the best team in basketball. And I know I interrupted you just so you weren't able to get to it, but nothing excuses what happened Saturday night. That loss against Phoenix, where... Speaking of Zubats, he said it after the Clippers beat the brakes off the Knicks yesterday. He said, we never had games like this with the Lakers where we just routed a team. No. You're supposed to rout the Suns. Instead, they were down by 17, and once again, you're fighting uphill all game against the worst team in the league.
Chris Broussard, I don't think it's fair, especially out of respect for LeBron, how consistent he's been over the last eight seasons. But Nick and I have been talking about this for a couple weeks. Can LeBron James still be the best basketball player in the world by title if the Lakers do not make the playoffs?
My feeling has been this. LeBron has earned the benefit of the doubt, kind of what you said, where I'm not going to judge him off of, 12 games coming off injury and take the mythical title from him of best player in the world. But if they don't get to the playoffs, then I don't think he's the best player in the world anymore. And part of that's watching it. Like, watching it, he hasn't been the best player in the world. He's not going to be first team All-NBA this year. And he I can't even blame the 6-12 record without LeBron on them not making the playoffs. Because they've had so many bad losses with LeBron since he's been back. Now, you can talk about health, whatever. We judge other players. If you're playing, you're healthy, according to us.
Yes.
So I'm not giving that excuse. So losses to Atlanta, Phoenix, Memphis,
the Pelicans
New Orleans.
Without Anthony.
Yeah, I can't So I'm, like I said, he's earned the benefit of the doubt. He's earned it where I'm not going to judge him off these 12 games. But if they don't make the playoffs, and especially if they keep losing like this, no, he's not the best player anymore. Because what I see is he's still putting up great numbers. But he can't, or at least he hasn't been controlling a game like he has throughout his career. Right. So now there comes a point in a great player's career where you can still get numbers, but you can't control the game the way you have in your prime. And right now, that's what it's looking like.
It's going to be the first time in a decade that the general consensus is that he's not the best player in the world. I can't, personally, I can't go from how clear and obvious and enormous the gap was 9 months ago to say someone has overtaken him when we don't even know who that someone would be.
Durant.
Like, well, maybe the only thing you have to change, though, if you change how far they were behind him. If you just forget about reanalyzing LeBron, but if you, we didn't think that the other players were that far behind LeBron.
Not
we,
9 months ago. I mean, there were people saying
not
Durant.
James Harden.
Durant was the best player already.
If James Harden, Durant, and Steph. I could say Giannis. Giannis was a long way away. But if James Harden wins that series, if Chris Paul stays healthy, he wins that series. We not talking about James Harden?
I think there's a little revisionist history going on what the commentary was surrounding LeBron when he hit the second game winner of the playoffs. When they were what he was doing in game 7 against Indiana, game 6 and 7 against Boston, game 1 of the NBA Finals against the Warriors. That's what I'm talking about 9 months ago. Now,
but there were some people, and I was agreeing with you that LeBron's the best. But there are a number of people that think Durant.
I thought Kevin Durant was LeBron. So close after two finals MVPs and the head-to-head battle. It was clearly those were the two best players.
So that to me is that's where I'm saying I think people are maybe hazy on the history a bit. Durant was getting killed in that Houston series. He didn't take the shot in the one game. Then he didn't take it again in the next game. They're down 3-2. The gap seemed enormous. Now, someone is going to get the title. The figurative title belt is going to be handed over. I don't know to whom. To me, there's four guys in the running for it. Harden, Giannis, KD, and Steph are all eligible for it this postseason. Mm-hmm. I don't think LeBron is done being the best player in the world, but if you don't make the playoffs any of the last 5 years, if he didn't have the playoff run that he had, he would have given it up then because he wasn't the best player in the regular season.
Well, you wonder, too, will people start looking, and I wouldn't judge it off this year, but going forward, will people start looking at, well, he did that in the East. Because the West, he could
coast. Say that.
Yeah, but he could coast like this and pace himself in the East and just take over. I mean, he said he's activating himself, playoff LeBron, and we haven't really seen any difference, you know, so.
All right. Well, thankfully, you're sticking around, Chris Broussard. We're going to see you later in the show. But next, did Antonio Brown take having Big Ben for granted? We'll talk about it next on First Things First.
I thought LeBron, when he said activate, he was talking about, like, some of that stuff you
could have. Things First, and we're going viral. The Eagles signed Jason Kelce to a 1-year extension, and now that he's the highest-paid center in the NFL, you think he could afford, I don't know, a printer, scanner, something like that. Well, think again. With the Super Bowl champion having to go to a UPS store to sign his contract. Y'all, there's got to be some kind of app or some better way to do this, right?
There is a scanner. Yes. The scanner app and the iSign app. I pay.
Totally. DocuSign.
You got to use those. Yeah. Yeah. All those things. Because otherwise, man, I got to the UPS store to print stuff, though. I don't have a functional.
He looked like he had the one I'd be going to.
Listen, let me tell you something. Kelce, he's always going to be an all-time favorite. His speech at the victory parade, let him do what he want to do. Okay. Wear whatever kind of uniform you want to. Highest paid center. Also, the best. Travis Frederick hurt this year. The best center in football.
And by the way, see, I think he was dressed better at the victory parade with the Mummers costume than that hoodie with the trees on it. That looks like something our stats guy, Dusty, I think has in his closet.
Dusty's basically wearing the same thing.
Exactly. Almost every day. Yeah. I mean, look at that.
It's where'd like a hipster
that,
look,
man?
Maybe, right?
Come on.
All right, y'all. Kelce. Time now for some stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. Over the weekend, Andre Iguodala said he does not think his teammate, Steph Curry, gets the respect he deserves. He also said Steph is the second best point guard of all time. Nick Wright, does your list match up with Iggy's?
It doesn't right now, but it might one day.
Okay.
I don't think Steph, I don't think it's plausible that he passes Magic. To pass Magic, he'd have to become one of the five greatest players of all time.
Ooh.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Right.
But could he pass Isaiah Thomas and Oscar Robertson? I think he could. Oscar's a tough one now. He's a Pantheon all-timer. But, yeah, he could get there. But I agree with his larger point, which is Steph has been disrespected to a degree. It's one of the reasons I push back on some of the Durant's the second best player in the world or the best player in the world conversation when I don't even know if Durant's the best player on his own team. Steph's impact on the game also globally has been, I think, the only person in the last 40 years to top it is Michael Jordan. I think Steph has changed the way people play basketball more than anyone of his generation.
It's huge.
Sorry, C.
I like that. All right, free agency officially begins next week. Dude, and it's been reported that barring some kind of last-minute snag, Nick Foles is going to be a Jaguar. Yeah, the Jags are expected to release Blake Bortles. Nick, how much of an upgrade is Foles for Jacksonville?
See, I mean, he'd be an upgrade. Do you think Bortles be on the team if they sign Nick Foles?
You're going to let me talk?
Okay, I knew that.
Good Lord.
That's not my fault.
They take a drink of water.
Go ahead. I'll
Nick Foles is going to be on the Jags. It is an upgrade. I do believe that they'll take the cap hit and they'll release him if they can't trade him. NFL teams know Blake Bortles is available, so I don't believe they'll be able to trade him. You got to get rid of him. It was a bad deal you signed last year, re-up with him. Nick Foles is only an improvement if you put some talent around him. He's got to be able to throw to the backs and the tight ends.
All right. We're going to transition now to Antonio Brown. Now, Brown's made it known that he is ready to get out of Pittsburgh. It seems like he's going to get his wish, with Brown being due to a roster bonus on March 17th. Now, the Raiders, Titans, and Washington are the three teams who have reportedly expressed the most interest. Over the weekend, 11-time Pro Bowl wide receiver Larry Fitzgerald was asked about AB's situation.
No, I love AB. He's Mr. Big Chess is a good friend of mine. But I don't think he's going about it the right way, personally. You know, to be able to play with an all-time quarterback like he's able to play with, I don't think he understands how good he has it. You know, it could get tough out there.
All right, we see the crowd going wild there. CC, is Fitz right?
Well, the thing that Fitzy, of course he's right, but this is something Fitzy and I have talked about through the years. Mm. And because Fitzy's had a couple opportunities where he could have left Arizona. And he believes in the organization, believes in the ownership there, and a number of other reasons. His community is there that he's involved in, and he's got kids there. But this is a huge part of the conversation. Man, I wonder how good I could be if I played with a good to great quarterback for more seasons than I had. I had the ability in my career that I think I made 8 Pro Bowls with 5 different quarterbacks. And it becomes harder to do your job. Any job where you're associated with a team and it's about talent around you. It's not only about you, but it's about the talent, because the talent around you will bring out the best in you. That's the situation he's had there with Ben Roethlisberger. Not only Ben Roethlisberger, look at the running backs, the 1,000-yard rushers they've had there. Look at the offensive line that they've had, because their offensive line is so good. Now, this is a deep football point. They allow their tight end to release and go into pass routes because they're tight, because their offensive line is good. As a wide receiver, that's one more guy to draw coverage.
What about stability at coaching compared the two?
All these things. But the ultimate thing is stability at the ownership. Art Rooney, his dad, his grandfather, all of them have one thing in consistent. We're trying to win championships, and all of them, their main business is the Pittsburgh Steelers. He shows up to the Pittsburgh Steelers every day, third-generation ownership, every day trying to have trying to put a winner on the field. And when you can't get along with people like that, because I understand Ben.
Right.
Ben's got some issues in itself, and some of those things, they won't be addressed. He's the star on the team, and they changed the rules for him. Okay, we all got that at our office. So what do? Just quit? Like, we're just going to quit because, oh, they treat another person better because they have great history, because this person brings in a lot of advertising dollars? Yes, that's what happens in the real world. I don't like how AB's going about it. I don't like how he's thrown the organization, the coach, and the quarterback under the bus. If you don't want to be there, that's okay. But just say that. There's a different way of going about it. I don't believe he's going about this the right way.
On Fitzy's point, like, listen, I've never heard Larry Fitzgerald say anything negative about another football player.
Yes.
And I mean, you've known him since he was a kid. And where you bring up the similarities in your guys' career, there are a lot of really good similarities. The unfortunate one is Larry had a handful of years with Kurt Warner. You had a couple years with Warren Moon and then a couple years with Randall Cunningham. Mm-hmm. And other than that, it was a lot of stops and starts as far as your quarterbacks.
Jim McMahon at the end of his career.
Right.
Wade Wilson, God bless his soul. Mm-hmm. Rich Gannon as trying to be from a dual threat quarterback, trying to be a starter. Not the Rich Gannon MVP in Oakland.
Right.
No, Rich Gannon that maybe you should play defensive back. Right. Sean Salisbury. Yeah, all these stellar names. And Spurgeon Wynn at the end of my career almost got me
killed. Got you knifed.
Almost got me cussing.
Absolutely.
On TV.
Right. Yeah. And so, listen, and that's the same thing for Larry. So I'm just, for when you looked at the other guys that were Hall of Famers in your era, so Jerry had all-timers. Michael Irvin had an all-timer.
Jerry, two all-timers.
Correct.
Joe Montana.
And then Steve
Young. On to Steve Young.
And
yes.
Andre Reed
yes.
had an all-timer.
Jim Kelly.
And so I would imagine there was some, I don't want to say jealousy, but there was some like, man, what would it be like for me?
Me and Michael Irvin had this conversation. Right. I said, you think the Dallas Cowboys wouldn't have been at least as good with me on the team and you being in Minnesota? You think you're going to win them Super Bowls in Minnesota and then me going to Dallas where not? Good. Yeah, I know he talks a lot, but that right there got him to shut up because it's the reality. The game is easier the more talented players you play with, especially quarterback. And for this one reason, if I don't get open, a great quarterback can still get me the ball.
That's right.
If I'm double covered, the coach has been telling him, don't throw to that zone. A great quarterback will trust you and still throw it in that zone. So there are a lot of times advantages you don't have that the great quarterback, it gives you as a wide receiver.
Do y'all think AB ends up kind of eating his words on this?
Well, he's not going to end up. It would be very, very difficult.
He needs to eat that ugly mustache. That's what he needs to do.
In a better situation than the Pittsburgh Steelers. Larry Fitzgerald in his career has caught touchdown passes from 15 different quarterbacks, including Richard Bartell, Max Hall, Sean King, and others. Antonio Brown in his career has caught touchdown passes from one quarterback.
Right.
Oh, and come on. Just stop, man.
So that's going to change next year. We just don't know who that quarterback's going to be.
Things get different.
Y'all calling him spoiled? Is that what I hear?
No, it's a wide receiver thing. I'm not going to. I mean, he brings up some of the worst traits that wide receivers ever have when they call them divas, selfish, all those things. Right there. Because we was getting beyond that. We had Larry Fitzgerald. We had Calvin Johnson. DeAndre. We were getting to where the guy didn't have to be a diva to be in the league.
DeAndre Hopkins as well.
DeAndre Hopkins. Julio Jones. Yep. We were getting. But. This guy steals the show.
A little throwback. All right, I see.
I ain't about the attention.
Coming
up. My hair is blue.
My mustache is blonde.
I came to training camp with a Rolls Royce and a helicopter.
Any chance of turning around.
I ain't trying to get no attention. No. Just keep that camera on.
So fun. All right, we're back here with Chris Broussard, and we are talking Celtics. Now, yesterday, they suffered another loss to the Rockets and James Harden. Boston has now lost 5 out of their last 6 games, and it's not looking better anytime soon. Tomorrow, they begin a 4-game road trip against the Warriors, Kings, Lakers, and Clippers. Chris Broussard, is there anything the Celtics can do to turn this thing around?
I think so. I mean, I'm losing faith in them. But I do think that, like, I have more faith in them than the Lakers turning it around.
Yeah.
That's not saying much. But here's the 3 things I think have to happen.
One, you're still going to need a dang on leprechaun to get this one. I can understand saying, oh, yeah, I got more confidence than them than the Lakers. But, yeah.
I think they got Philadelphia's number. They need to help Philadelphia remains in that 4 slot, you know, because they could pass Indiana. I don't think they want Indiana in the first round because I just think they're a tough matchup for the Sixers, even though the Sixers have more talent. But for the Celtics, Kyrie, number one, he has let the media criticism deflate him. Mm-hmm. And you can see it in the way he's responding to the media. Like, remember he had that 30, like that streak about 7 games where he averaged about 30-10 right before the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. They went 6-1 in those games. Then at the All-Star break, everybody, you know, he's talking with Kevin Durant in the hallway and the media makes a big deal out of it. He stays and watches the MVP ceremony with KD on the court for the All-Star game. The media makes a big deal. And he has come out and talked about it and he's let it deflate him. And I think it's impacting his play to some degree. So I think that's number one. He's got to do some soul searching, get his swag back, and not worry about all the outside stuff. Secondly, some of the other players, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, they have become more isolation players,
yeah,
too.
Bad shots right. waiting to happen.
Remember, now, last year it was just do what Brad says and we do that. Mm-hmm. Now they've gotten a little bit better. They're feeling themselves a little more. So they're going ISO. And I also think, you know, when you play basketball, when one of your guys is ISO, that's contagious. Mm-hmm. And I think with Kyrie playing that way, they have become that.
The
they
ball
need to
sticks.
They need to realize, look, what's going to help our stock, Jason and Jalen, is if we win.
Yes.
Nobody's looking at your numbers necessarily. It's if you win. Right. And then the third thing, Brad Stevens, and I know you've talked about it, rightly so, can he handle the superstar egos and all that? He's going to have to make a hard decision with Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward, since the All-Star break, 23 minutes a game, 31% shooting, 5 points a
30.
Game. He's taking minutes from some of these young guys who already mm-hmm. are bucking. We've made a big deal out of Kyrie's return, but we need to really look at Gordon Hayward's return and him taking minutes from these guys and hurting the chemistry. So those three things have to happen for them to turn
around. I agree with your list of three things. Where I disagree with you is the idea that winning a first-round series is somehow some silver lining for this team. Anything short of a very competitive conference finals appearance is an abject failure by the Boston Celtics. They've made the conference finals each of the last 2 years.
East was a lot weaker.
Okay, but they were projected to be at the top of this strong.
Do they have
East.
More talent than Toronto?
What, more talent than Toronto?
I don't think
When they started the season, we thought on paper, pick these rosters, I'll take that roster. Now, we've seen Toronto's role players get better. And then also, we didn't know if Kawhi was going to be top five or not. Now we see top five on both ends of the court. Yeah. So now it doesn't look like it. But before the season, I think we took the Suns.
It was very controversial of me to not have them in the NBA Finals.
I didn't have them there either.
They had the second highest projected win total of any team in basketball going into this season. How many times did we hear that, I mean, they made the conference finals last year and they're getting two All-Stars. Now, it turns out they only got one All-Star because Gordon Hayward, and I totally agree with you. And that is the one movable piece as far as move him to the bench that is doable for this team, because you can say, listen, man, it's not about long-term, it's just about mm-hmm. the injury. But see, you brought up the fact, how long has Brad Stevens known Gordon Hayward?
Oh, man, since high school.
Since he's like
he built a program at Butler around him.
Right.
And so that there's the emotional and human element there for that decision. But the Celtics are staring at what I would consider a disastrous year. Because whether they get bounced in the first round or the second round, Kyrie's gone if that's the result. The only chance to keep him is a deep playoff run. And what evidence do we have from this team that they are capable of winning 4 of 7 against a good team?
Yeah, we don't have the evidence. We can say we appropriate that like the way we used to do with LeBron. Oh, man, the Cavs don't look good, but we believe in LeBron. There's nothing that we have. Brad Stevens, we did have that. Oh, man, Brad Stevens is going to be able to get them through this. No, we don't have that. They're an elite defensive team. Sometimes they are. Most of the times, they're not. Offensively, their inability to have a system, and the system that works for them worked better when they had less talent. Because in that system, it doesn't require your individual ability to be able to score the basketball. But what happens is when you have a player like Kyrie, and I'm watching him, because Jaylen Brown and Tatum, I'll use them as examples, this offseason, they worked on their individual game. Because when you're in the gym as a player, you're not thinking about the team. I'm working on myself. Right. Kyrie's working on himself. Tatum's working on himself. So all of them came back to training camp. And you know what? After an exciting postseason, each one of them thought, I can do more. Right. I got more moves. I got more stuff that I can do. I can't wait for my second year. Terry Rozier, he's got his own agenda. I want to be a starter. I want to be paid. So now you got all these different stories that people are trying, that are bigger in their life than the Celtics winning. That's why I don't believe. I don't believe they're going to be able to get back on the same page. I always believe, Ty Lue talked about it. Man, Kyrie Irving is not about that team and ball movement. He is about, I can take him off the dribble. I can take him off the bounce. And that does not fit into Brad's system, so I don't see him turning it around, Chris.
This is why you typically don't see teams with a lot of young players contend. Because when you're Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are in their rookie scale deal. When you're a rookie in that 4-year window or whatever, your main goal, and I got to be honest, I think rightly so. Establish yourself as a star so you can get that big deal. Kyrie did. Kyrie didn't come close to winning early in his career because that's LeBron didn't really either his first few years. Mm-hmm. You want to establish yourself as a star, then you get that max deal. Then that's usually when the winning becomes the priority. Yeah. And that's a problem. I still have a little faith in that day, but I think Toronto and Milwaukee are just better.
Okay. Like, so I think their ceiling is the second round anyway.
I don't think that's their ceiling. I would not be shocked if they can get past a Milwaukee or a Toronto. Milwaukee, we haven't seen do it. I like picking up Pau Gasol, some experience, but they don't really have much experience going deep. Toronto, I think, is better than Boston, but I give them a shot.
All right, like I said, St. Patty's Day coming up. Maybe they get some luck at Irish. I don't know. We'll see what's going on. Chris, stick around. Coming up, is Magic Johnson the one that we need to blame for the Lakers' disappointing season? I'm not saying it. I'm just asking. That's next on
First
Things
First. We can pass it around, though.
We're going to talk about it. That's what we're going to do. Sunday, the Monster Energy Cup Series heads to Phoenix as the world's best drivers battle it out in the desert. It all starts at 3:30 Eastern, only on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Now, we're back here with Chris Broussard, and it is time to go viral. Ohio State wide receiver Paris Campbell ran the fastest 40-yard dash at the Combine, and LeBron James, well, he took notice, posting, quote, "My goodness, Lil Bro is lightning fast. Can't wait for his next journey at the next level."
See, you've been talking about this kid for a long time now.
Oh, yeah. He's the real deal. He's from Akron, too. So LeBron's known him since he was a kid.
Oh, okay.
That's the reason why. It's not only the Ohio State thing. We know if LeBron went to college, he would have gone to Ohio State. I wouldn't have let him play basketball. He would have played some football. We would have got that out of him. LeBron's a huge fan. But Paris Campbell is the real deal. I believe the best athlete in this draft. Over 200 pounds running. He's going to run a 4.2 at his pro day.
Oh, wow.
When you run 4.3 electronically, when you get that hand time, he's going to run in the low 4.2. So, phenomenal athlete. In this new NFL, get the ball in the wide receiver's hands, allow them to make plays. That's what Paris Campbell's going
to
do.
And unlike the wide receiver that turned everybody's heads with his size and 40 time, DK Metcalf, Paris Campbell can change direction at an elite level as well. That's something that's going to be tougher for the kid from Ole Miss.
All right, he's agile. All right, sticking with LeBron. It's been a tough season so far in Lakerland, and right now it looks like the team will miss the playoffs for the sixth straight season. Over the weekend, owner Jeannie Buss was asked about the challenging season so far. And she said, quote, "The biggest challenge for us is the fake news about how we were supposedly trading our entire roster for a certain player, which is completely not true. But those stories leak out, and it hurts our young players. It wasn't fair. There was a lot of hype and things written about a potential trade leading into the trade deadline. All of it false, but it got a lot of coverage." All right, Chris Broussard, how much of the Lakers' disappointing season starts at the top?
Well, I don't know if you're talking about Jeannie Buss at the top or Magic.
Magic and Pelinka.
It goes back further than most people acknowledge. Now, we don't know what Paul George would have done. Maybe he would have stayed in Oklahoma City. But part of why he didn't really strongly consider the Lakers because they kind of softened on him. They started thinking LeBron and Kawhi instead of, remember how they were so much in on Paul George?
Okay, yeah.
And then I'm not saying they didn't want him to some degree.
But obviously him and his camp felt that.
Right, no question. Like 12:01 a.m., Magic's at LeBron's house. Pelinka should have been at Paul George's house. Mm. They should have recruited him just as hard as they did LeBron. Now, nobody saw him playing as well as he is now, but can you imagine him and LeBron together if he is playing like this?
And they wouldn't have had to recruit him, by the way. They could have traded for him.
They could have done that. They could have traded for him and
just said, we're not going to rely on Lakers' exceptionalism to get him there. Just, real quick, the other point here, Jeannie Buss is wrong. She's either knowingly or unknowingly lying.
The word she's using, entire roster. It never was the entire roster.
And when she calls it, just throws that fake news slur out there. Like, the people reporting on this, whether it's Broderick Turner in Los Angeles or Chris Haynes or Tanya Ganguly, these are credible reporters who were not making this up.
Right.
And it's toxic for the fans who think reporters are just going to make things up. If you're a credible reporter, Chris, you know this better than I do, you are not running with specific names unless someone who is in a position to tell you these things has told you these things. So she's just flatly
wrong. The only leg she has to stand on is there were reports that, like, of six players and things like that. What I'm told is it was like take any of these six players. Like, take three or four of them rather than
of these.
We're going to send six guys to you for two and things like. So she's nitpicking and then using that to
paint everything with a brush.
Right. So that's the first thing with the front office. Mm-hmm. Secondly is the composition of the roster. And LeBron has something to do with this. LeBron was looking at it like, look, you can't outshoot Golden State. We tried that in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. The Cavs shot more threes than the Warriors the last few years because they tried to outshoot them. So he thought, let's get some gritty, tough grinders, defenders that we can switch everything. We can be tough with Lance and Rondo because that was the formula they used when they beat them in 2016. So he's thinking that. But at the end of the day, Magic and Pelinka are in charge. Mm-hmm. And so they – the buck stops with them.
You ain't in charge if you sitting out in front of my house.
Hold on. He signed a 4-year deal.
Yeah, but
so you got
him
locked up.
You ain't in charge because one of the things is getting my opinion on what we're going to do moving forward. So LeBron, like a lot of other great basketball players, Magic Johnson included, trying to put together a basketball team. That's not how they're going to make their money. Because that was not the right. What they did in Cleveland and Miami, putting shooters around LeBron James, and regardless of what he wants to think, that's the best system for LeBron.
Agree.
So not only is Jenny Buss wrong, and Jenny Buss is wrong for this reason. What LeBron said in his interviews and what Magic said in his interviews. Magic said, you know something? It's up to the Pelicans. We made an offer. We're waiting for them to call. So he justified the rumors by saying, yes, I'm in dialogue with them.
Right, he did.
He could have easily said.
He affirmed it.
He justified it twice. Because then when he met with the players afterwards, after the deadline, he didn't say all that stuff was false. He said they got to be big boys.
LeBron James himself, the original big boy, what did he say? Oh, me and AD talked about this summer. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Well, that's enough evidence from the top. So the Lakers are a part of the problem. LeBron James, when they met with him, they asked him what was his input. And this was the type of roster that he thought moving forward. Mm-hmm. They were all wrong. You made a big boy decision. Now it's time to take the big boy blame.
You know, the problem with Jeannie Buss is the leak is coming from inside. So she's basically on record saying it's fake news, right? Upset because, you know, the credible reports mm-hmm. were leaked. But you have Magic Johnson and LeBron James from inside your camp, essentially.
That's not leaking. They're just talking. They're just doing normal interviews.
No, but
they
that's
didn't
what I'm
know
saying.
The effect. Right. They did not know the effect. Especially when, what if you don't get this guy?
The other problem for Jeannie Buss is, who hired Magic and Pelinka? Who decided that we're going to have two GMs who fit the same role? Like the two, not two GMs, but the two guys at the front of the franchise. I don't mind with mind Magic or Pelinka. Both of them are, you're hiring them because of relationships, right? But if you're gonna have a Danny Ainge, you need to have a Mike Zarin. Who's the smart guy in the Lakers? Who's the analytical guy?
Well, they were looking at it like Golden State, Bob Myers was an agent. Mm-hmm. And they looked at Pelinka, agent, same deal. You know, they thought he'd be the smart guy.
Right, but Golden State had the smart guy in Jerry West. One of the all-time greatest team builders
ever. They should have brought in.
And Jerry West, who, by the way, got
it. Let me tell you something, man. Jerry West, I give Jerry West credit. And I believe Golden State from a front office, they do things very good. But there was time in Golden State that the people in the front office didn't know who Steph Curry was. And he's sitting right downstairs. One of the greatest shooters, if not the greatest shooter ever. Golden State, remember, there were times they weren't in love with him. Remember, they thought there could be, should we extend?
Him or Monte could have been, right.
Yeah, so
Monte
then,
Ellis.
Clay, they got, in this era of free basketball, they got two of the best shooters all time, if not the best shooters of all time. So that right there, that's going to help you a lot more than with the Lakers.
Sure, but why did they keep Clay? Because Jerry West came downstairs and said, you cannot trade him for Kevin Love.
Right.
The point is that I'm making is even if LeBron signed off on these players.
He did more than sign off. Brought him. Yeah. I'm not saying
they had a list of players.
Right. And he
these were two of the players that they selected, Lance and Rondo.
So the
he had input.
Okay.
This is a discussion between them on what type of team we want to put around.
If there's a smart analytics guy in the room, they say, hey, I understand the archetype you're talking about, the type of player. Here are the types of players that are actually good at that. Here are the types of players that actually, when you look at their numbers, they are going to help you more than they hurt you. It is not a coincidence that if you look at just basic plus minus, the worst Lakers are Rondo, Lance, JaVale, Beasley, who's now gone, and KCP. Four guys they brought in this offseason, and one guy they extended this offseason when they didn't need to. That is not to say it doesn't fall on the players. It falls on LeBron for not being better, and LeBron, if you want to blame him for the injury, falls on LeBron for being injured, falls on Ingram for not being what he was supposed to be until these last 2 weeks. Kuzma, who started slumping right when Ingram started doing well. The coach has been awful. All of that is true. What's also true is a smart front office does not allow you to squander a year with LeBron, even if he misses 18 games.
You can bring in those types of players that we mentioned, but keep some shooters, too. Go get some shooters, too, just in case. I also blame the front office, and I guess it would be Magic in this case, for not getting out in front of the trade rumors. When all that stuff was out there, Magic, go talk to the media and say, look, I don't know where these trade rumors come from. Even if you're lying, because GMs are front office, they lie all the time.
Right.
So even if you go out there, I don't know where these trade rumors
but
are coming from.
But that's what Jeannie Buss said, Chris. She was like, he's like a nice guy with a big smile, right? And he talks too much. So she put it on him.
Well, he should have talked, but talked like this. Like, look, we like our team. Like everybody else, we're trying to improve it. But we love our young players. And I don't know where all these trade rumors come from.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.